Just moving to a very different topic.
You
said there that Marxism just couldn't handle the problem of death at all.
Yeah.
This seems to indicate that you think there is a very fundamental deficiency in Marxism.
Sure it is, not only in Marxism.
Could you elaborate?
Sure, yes. You have about, the problem begins in the 18th century. The best source for understanding it is that introductory lecture by Schiller on universal history, which he gave in the fall of 1789 in Vienna. That is the classic formulation, I am inventing a history now, in which the middle class of which I am a member comes out on top as the fulfillment of the meaning of history. And why am I doing that, falsifying history and so on? Because that gives me a virtual immortality being on top of history instead of the immortality which I don't believe personally. The virtual immortality. So the substitution of being on top of history as a sense of immortality instead of the lost order of existence. And that goes through from the 18th century to the present. There's a very good study by the psychologist Lifton in Yale on revolutionary immortality, where he works out that problem without knowing about the 18th century things, on the basis of the works of Mao. Here is the problem. The virtual immortality by inventing an imaginary history on which one can feel on top, because one has lost the faith in personal immortality. That is one of the strong forces. But there are always people who do not fall into that fantasy of an intellectual, and to find out that in the end they die nevertheless. There are, for instance, very good studies now by Molinar, that French literary historian who's living near New York, on Sartre and what's the name of the lady, Simone de Beauvoir, who are now, after a life of fake revolutionary quality, getting old and find out that they have done nothing that's worthwhile in all their life. It's a mess. It's a breakdown of old age where they realize now they die. And what has become of the revolution for which they believe they have lived? They find out they haven't lived for anything. They've made a mess of their life. A very tragic situation, I say. So exactly the Sartres are not the kind of people for whom I have excessive pity. But it is still a tragic situation. And they find out that they have to die. A revolution or no revolution. Now here's a case of people who are very vociferous and very articulate, you see. But it is a case, of course, of many other people who are less articulate. You know? I know a lot of revolutionary intellectuals who are, say, staying out before their time because they simply, all of a sudden, have to face death and can't do it. But then you get a very odd case. When several years ago I was in Zagreb, Yugoslavia, there was a faculty for political science of 8 people, very intelligent people, invited me for a couple of lectures. And one of them picked me up at the airport. And the first thing, in order to put me into the context of politics, he said, don't make any mistakes, we are not communists. Communists are Russian. We are Marxists. And that means Marx of the Paris Manuscript of 1845, before the Capital. And that Marxism is then interpreted by them in the direction of Husserl's phenomenology and French existentialism. Not only Sartre, also Gabriel Marcel.
Also?
Gabriel Marcel.
Right.
So they have, here, they use Marx, you might say, as a facade behind which they are very difficult to distinguish from a Christian existentialist.
But don't we all find ourselves, to some extent, well involved in political action? as I am for comfort. Yeah.
Are you the most important
person? Yes. Hmm. In the sense that I participate in the political movement.
Yeah.
In a very significant way. My right
hand. Yeah.
Don't we all tend to do this on talent? If one finds oneself depending on the circumstances, on the company, and on the place.
Yeah.
Describing oneself in Cork as a Marxist.
Yeah.
Describing oneself in Milton Institute as a Thomist.
Yeah.
And describing oneself somewhere else as a phenomenologist.
Yeah.
And somewhere else as an existentialist, because one is in the company of phenomenologists.
Yeah.
And I think this is a necessary thing to do. In a sense, because one has to say really what one is not as much as what one is.
Yes.
And in the company of non-Marxists, of pragmatists, of the one tends to say, well, I use the Marxist analysis in politics, because I have to propose a course of action for the working class here and at the moment.
Yeah.
And I have to talk an intelligible language.
Yes.
It's a dead language, like all of the intelligible languages. So I coming back to your example of having a grudging pity for Sartre and de Beauvoir and so on, it seems to me the tragedy of their situation was that in the beginning they faced, when Sartre was simply an existentialist, when the facticity of existence, its meaninglessness, and the necessary illusions which accompany it, he did face it. But it was absurd, but it was nauseating, if you would say, that it was meaningless. And again, you had the escape into mysticism, because his revolution was a mystical leap, which you described earlier. And this was the tragedy. A leap into mysticism, and using the word mysticism in that sense, is always a tragic thing. And not merely a thing.
Yeah, but you would come closer to the motivations of what you call that leap. You have spoken of the facticity de l'existence in Sartre, and then of his conception, because there is only a facticity without meaning. One is condemned to be free. This complete inversion of the meaning of freedom as a condemnation instead of a freedom. That is characteristic of this alienated situation of Sartre. Yeah. Yes, you can call it tragic, you see, but I'm not so sure it is tragic. You see, it is a state of alienation. And I'm using another term for it, because it again goes back to a type that has become predominant since the 18th century, when, you might say, the subordination into a reality in which man is in relation to God, that relation is denied, and you're in a state of alienation, and you replace what you might say called a theophany by an egophany. So if you are an egophanic, obsessed individual, like Sartre is, like since the 8th century, a good number of them are, Comte or Marx or Ely, anybody of them, then you are what one wouldn't call a tragedy, you see, that is a libidinous obsession. I don't think a libidinous obsession is a tragedy. Tragedy requires something different. It's a pathological sense.
Possibly
as
merely pathetic. Huh?
Pathetic. It's pathetic. It's not tragic.
Yeah. I remember you have an essay on James in which you mentioned you use a category about James as Henry James as awareness of being in hell.
Yeah.
Could you say a bit more about that? But you just use that as one symbol by which one could express Henry James's implicit or explicit awareness of the situation in which he was. If someone came along, maybe could I open a window or something like that?
You can open the window after anyway.
Yeah, sure. Because I think some of the
is it the state of alienation, yes. But it is nothing new, isn't it? You get these states of alienation every time a society is in crisis. You see? When the established institutions and their mythology are no longer believed. Then people get into a state of alienation.